Lindale, Sid, greetings of the season, as they say.
Greetings, Steve. I had a little chuckle about your comment just before you went off about horses being born not too early. Not too early. As a matter of fact, at Hillendale, the stallion Byron, his dam was actually born in December. And her name, it was the Helen Alexander mare. Her name gives it away a little bit early.
I got to ask, I mean, what happens? I know that some people will report January 2nd, but it's an awkward situation. If a mare gets in distress and particularly when it's a first foal, that's probably the occasion where you got to be the most careful, but you're not going to delay it. You're going to deal with whatever happens, but it's problematic. What's the experience?
In this case, with a little bit early, I think she was born in mid-December. I mean, she was out of Aquilesia. So that's that beautiful family, Courtly D, bred by, Helen Alexander and Groves. Helen's Alexander and Groves. And Maps, too. So all three of them. She was unraced. I mean, there have been, obviously, everybody has mentioned that, sometimes there have been cases where people have actually been caught. But, sometimes these very early January foalings, it's pretty hairy because you don't want that foal to be born days earlier in December because all thoroughbreds become 1 year on January 1.
Yeah.
So,
you can't lose. It's a crazy way to lose a year. I mean, it's amazing actually that, but at the same time, if there's an issue, I mean, that's one of the reasons, given the gestation period, that's why you don't cover mares until, starting in mid-February. Essentially,
right.
And I imagine that you would not cover a first time mare that early for that reason, would you? Because they need to get into a you got to let them have a successful experience, and I mean, if there's going to be, I can remember talking to Dr. Alday about this, that if a mare is going to have foaling difficulties, including a potential premature foal, chances are it'll come with a first foal, and so delaying. I mean, is that something that would prompt the suggestion to wait a little bit longer to cover a first time broodmare?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that they'll wait, but there are people that actually, say the universal breeding shed, quote unquote, opens on February 15th, but there's some people that actually breed a little earlier than that too. So it's an interesting thing, especially now, Steve, with the most popular stallions and the size of the books. When you book a mare, the farm wants to know, obviously, the foaling date, the mare's history. They try to structure the book so that stallion isn't bombarded at a certain time with a bunch of mares that he has to take. So if you have a maiden mare, that allows them to work around it, because that mare isn't going to, you know, be foaling. So there's easier ways to fit those mares in. And a lot of them actually do get put up earlier because the stallion has time yet.
Well, and there are mares that have a tendency to go beyond the 10.5 months too.
And that's true too. Yeah. Right.
And once, you know, once you get the experience, and once you know, you know, there's some that, you know, will go an extra 3 weeks before they drop, than the typical. And once they get some experience and have had a few foals, you understand, you know, what you're dealing with. I mean, because I know that I've heard the anecdotes, and we, again, these are all based on conversations over the years with Dr. Alday, and
right.
You know, people get, you know, you get about 10 days past the projected foal date, and you start to get a little edgy, and you know, but if you know that your mare typically doesn't drop on the prospective date, it's not a big deal. But you adjust from there as well, and it's a tricky. We've never really talked about that, Sid, but the intricacies of planning the matings and then the breed backs. And,
right.
You know, what happens when you push too far into like May and you know, when you start delivering May foals, it becomes a bit of a tricky situation. And every so often you have to what they call reset the mare and skip a year because, mm-hmm. you know, you're pushing too late. And the chances are you could end up with a foal in mid-June. And so you skip and then you reset them and then cover them fresh in, you know,
yeah,
March
earlier.
First, let's say. Yeah.
Yeah, usually what will happen is every year it's going to get a little later and a little later and a
yes.
little later. So, you know, at some point that's what people do. They'll, you know, decide, well, let's give this mare a year off anyway. She may have had 5 consecutive foals, and each year it's gotten progressively later because that's just
right.
how it works. The real issue, and it's like a scheduling thing, is how these mares work with these extremely popular stallions and how to get them in. You know, especially these first-year sires, they're starting off fresh for the first time, too. So not a lot is known about them and how they'll handle big books. And it's, you know, it's quite a complex scheduling thing for these stallion managers too.
And the, you know, the other part of the whole equation that people may not realize, you know, especially it's one thing if you board your mare in Kentucky and it's an easy ship over to get a cover and then bring them back.
Excuse me. Yeah.
But if you happen to be, you know, somebody that is keeping mares in a regional system and are in New York and Pennsylvania, etc., and you send your mare to get covered by a Kentucky sire, you have to keep them there for 3, 4, 5 weeks to make sure that they get in foal. You don't just bring them back. You got to keep them, then get them checked to see if the cover took. And if the cover didn't take, you got to cover them again.
That's right. And usually, even after your last cover, you're going to stay 42 days post-cover to make sure you're in foal, especially if you're going to insure or take live foal protection. You know, that's what you do. So it's a lot of people will insure the prospective foal. So you have to have... you can't get that insurance until you're at 42 days. So, yeah, there's a lot. It's a very, it's super complex, especially at the biggest, with the biggest books and the most expensive horses and the traffic these stallions are dealing with.
Yeah, and this is, you know, this is for those that are, you know, getting involved perhaps for the first time. And these are, you know, these are elements that, you know, having somebody to work with, and you know, typically, you know, the people at the farms are going to help you with it and put you in contact with you know, other boarding facilities, and it's you know, hold your hand and get you acclimated, and it's
yeah. It's very complex because, you know, you'll have say your mare is there at a farm, and then the farm manager has to call in. Say you've got the contract, everything's all set. Well, around the time the mare is ovulating, the farm manager is going to actually call the stallion farm to set up that breeding date. And for the sake of argument, say she says, I need Thursday. Well, then the stallion booking secretary there might say, look, we don't have Thursday. We already have three covers that day. So suddenly you now have to flip over to another day. And, you know, it becomes, I've seen this firsthand, the traffic. And sometimes when you see a catalog page, Steve, you'll see that a horse has been covered by, a mare has been covered by two stallions. Well, frequently what happens is somebody just says, you know, I need this mare covered. And so they flip over to another stallion to get out of the contract. And so you have, you know, if, say the horse had been covered once by stallion A, didn't take, has to be recovered. There isn't room. They switch to another stallion. Now it's stallion B. Well, in that catalog page, sometimes at the bottom, you'll see two stallions listed. And that's why, because that mare was actually covered by two stallions.
Interesting. That's interesting. Huh. That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many intricacies to this. And one of the things also is if you do have a later foaling mare, it's actually to your benefit to wait. And I mentioned this to you the other day, wait to book a stallion, because later on, as you start getting into May, you've got more stallions with free time. And because it's later in the season, you may get a discount on the stud fee as well. So, or you have a better chance to get into a bigger stallion later in the year without having to commit early if you know your mare is foaling late. So there's various, you know, it doesn't make sense if you got a late foaling mare to try to book early when, you know, you're going to have a chance to get in later on. So there's all sorts of various strategies you can use when you're doing this.
Great information. And I didn't necessarily expect to go in this direction, but that's the beauty of the conversation.
That's the organic nature of these conversations. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. I do want to talk about the season ending. You know, we're 13 days of racing. And kind of tracking the first crop sire contest, as well as Constitution has done, American Pharoah seemingly has it's insurmountable, right, at this point.
Oh yeah, I mean, American Pharoah as of today has 2.8 million in progeny earnings, 2 million for Constitution, so he's got this thing wrapped up. Number of winners, both of them have 26 winners each, as does Darby Dance Tapiture. So you know, they're pushing out winners as well as quality horses. the top three stallions right now are American Pharoah, First Cross Stallions, Constitution, Pallas Malice, and then Liam's Map is in four. I'll just read out the top ten. Competitive Edge, also at Ashford, is number five. Number six is Tapiture at Derby Dan. Seven is the aforementioned Bayern at Hillendale. Eight is Kozad, the only one outside of Kentucky, a journeyman stud in Florida, Distorted Humor Horse. Number nine is Wicked Strong, and number 10 is Summer Front. So, interesting group of horses, and it's always good, I've found, Steve, to be in that top 10, top 12 list as a first-year sire, because it gives that horse a chance the next year to kind of ignite again. And if you don't, we've seen what's happened, this short leash and the plenty of foreign countries that are shopping to try to pick up horses that they know the Americans are too impatient with, and that they may still have a chance to get some mileage out of. And so there's that pressure, as we've talked about here frequently. And so appearing on these lists are pretty important for stallion managers.
There's something remarkable, actually, about that list that catches my eye. And that is, you got the top 10 from 10 different farms.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Is that? Yeah, you're right.
Everybody got...
No. A Competitive Edge and American Pharoah are both in Ashford.
Oh, there's Ashford. Okay, so Ashford landed two.
Yeah, that's
two.
Right.
Ashford, okay, there you go. Yeah, you're right. Ashford landed two, and then into the, you know, into the next tier, Tonalist is an addition with Liam's Map. But still, nine farms, and not everybody had multiple new stallions as offered, but it is kind of a spread the wealth scenario, and
it really is, and a wide variance in stud fees too.
Yes, yeah, and one thing when you look at the statistics, instead of you have to look beyond just the earnings. For instance, look at the chief earner, and find horses on the list who haven't necessarily had big stake winners, big high purse, Breeders' Cup type races and other grade one juvenile wins. For instance, Wicked Strong, for him to have, he's got 23 winners from 62 runners and 130 two-year-olds in total, but his biggest single earner, Wicked Slider, has only made 64,000.
That's
everybody,
a good point. Yeah.
Right? Everybody else has got seven-figure earners. So obviously, Wicked Strong is getting a nice array of winners. Bayern as well. Bayern, how about 21 winners from 49 runners and 95 two-year-olds in total? And his biggest earner is $107,000 Tempers Rising. And so Bayern is clicking
extremely well that way. Yeah. He's getting some good maiden special winners. And again, in this idea of diversity, his sire line, he's by Awfully Wild. And that's the Wild Again sire line, which is really, there's Milwaukee Brew at, was at Adina Springs. I don't know if he's still active or not, but there aren't too many Wild Again stallions around. And his inclusion here would be kind of important to the population in terms of diversity. So anything he does, I think, is going to be important.
when you're looking at these, I mean, beyond you know, the obvious, you know, number of stake winners, et cetera, to me, one of the things that you like to see and is a positive is a high percentage of runners that made the races. I mean, it's giving you an indication that the Stallion is got horses that are making the races and are sound. It's you know, part of that. It's part of that page evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
when you're looking at pages and
yeah.
you look at a broodmare and you see dam of seven horses of racing age, six starters, five winners. You're playing the percentages when you are in this game. And so you want a dam that throws runners and gets horses to the races, and you want, you know, a stallion that is getting babies to the races. It increases your likelihood of having success.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And you know, if you go through and take a look at the number of foals these horses have, and there are a lot. They have a lot of foals, and that's kind of almost the number one criteria right now to have a chance. American Pharoah, for example, had 142 named foals. Constitution, 110. Palace Malice, 116. Well, those are your top three right there. And you know, a horse like Bayern with 86 named foals. That is pretty impressive because he actually does have 22 winners. And if you take a look at the percentage, that's 26% winners from foals. Now, let me give you a little historical perspective before these big books started to dilute numbers and make stallion farms come up with, you know, kind of what I think are bogus statistical figures that they're dreaming up. It used to be that, Steve, if a young horse or any horse had 20% 2-year-old winners from foals, that was considered really exceptional. Well, if you go back to that old criteria and look at Bayern, again, to your point about some hidden talent here, 22 winners from 86 named foals is 26% winners to foals. Not winners to starters, winners to foals. A lot of times what guys do now at these farms and the advertising agencies is they start to take winners to starters, which makes your numbers look a lot better. But if you take the actual winners to the foals, that's 26% winners from foals, which is, you know, again, going back to that historical figure of 20%, that's a throwback number. And, you know, you should try and do that with all of these horses on your own. In other words, don't believe what's said to you. Actually look at the, and this applies, you know, everything, look at the actual documentation. So if you look at Kozan, that horse that stands a journeyman stud, his statistics, he had 68 named foals for 19 winners. That translates to 28% winners from foals. Yet, like Bayern, Kozan is throwing historically significant numbers that are hidden under all this other stuff. And that's another way to look at this when you're examining stallion performance. It's not all about the progeny earnings. What you pointed out, going and taking a look at the number of starters, that's really important because that tells you, do they get to the races? Then you take a look at the winners from foals, and that's where you can find some really startling statistical information that's not readily available these days, either in print or advertising materials.
Well, and you know, veteran breeders, they see this at a glance, and it helps them,
right?
Make the determinations. I did see also Wicked Strong. Wicked Strong. We just talked about Wicked Strong. Honor Code is who I wanted to mention. Honor Code. I saw a little blurb that
he's at 15 on this.
Yeah, and yeah. He just had one yesterday, and he hasn't had a black type winner yet, but he's getting a good share, and who. One of the things you have to appreciate too, when you look at this kind of thing, is the stallions that you wouldn't necessarily expect to have precocious foals or horses that were going to win at five and a half, six furlongs, and needed some added distance and needed some added maturity. And it's funny. The marketplace said, you've talked about it. The marketplace is a harsh environment, and some stallions get a long leash on this front, and others get judged very harshly and quickly.
That's really true, and it depends a lot on where a stallion goes to stud. Steve, because let's take Ashford. If American Pharoah is now going to be their fifth leading juvenile sire in the last 10 years, which is an absolutely freakish statistic. Now, a lot of this has to do with the horse that they have, obviously, but a lot of it is also not just the numbers, because they do get a lot of numbers, which are very helpful to the horse. But if you examine American Pharoah, for example, he might fall into that category you're talking about, where a stallion might have better three-year-olds than two-year-olds. Well, they've structured his book to include a lot of early maturing mares that produce early maturing horses, a lot of mares that were sprinters on the racetrack, mares that particularly were either turf runners or produced turf runners, as well as your group of high-quality mares that might produce classic horses. And this combination has produced, for American Pharoah, a really startling profile this year. All four of the stakes winners came on turf. A lot of them came early. He's shown an incredible turf profile, and that's kind of been juxtaposed late in the season by five winners he's had in Japan from only seven starters. In Japan, the best racing is on turf in Japan, right? Well, all five of those winners in Japan have come on dirt, as a contrast to what he's had in the United States and Europe, where he's been predominantly getting turf horses. Late in the season, he's come with some five dirt winners in Japan, one of which, Cafe Pharoah, won off by 10 lengths the other day in a visually impressive race. And, the only thing you can say is that, the horse is showing absolute talent, but he's been managed beautifully too. And that is a major part of stallion making. And obviously Ashford, which is the American division of Coolmore, are expert at that.
Beyond the first crop stallions, one of the other listings that caught my eye, out of curiosity, was the general two-year-old, the leading two-year-old sire statistics. And, for American Pharoah to insert himself, and so did Constitution, in the top five, and Declaration of War as well, that's a notable accomplishment.
That really is. That's,
right?
That's a tremendously notable accomplishment. You're absolutely right. Into Mischief is the leading general sire this year. He's also the leading two-year-old sire this year. If you haven't read it, Francis Caron on our blog site at Worked Orbit Consultants, Who's Hot, Who's Not, profiled Into Mischief last night. It's out on the website right now. He is having a dominating year, and of course he's been a outstanding two-year-old stallion and a speed stallion to begin with. But guess what? Your point, American Pharoah is number two on this list, and he's ahead of Uncle Mo, and Constitution is number four. Those are your top two freshman sires, and they're right in here with your veterans on the two-year-old sire list.
Yeah, Into Mischief, American Pharoah, Uncle Mo, Declaration of War, Constitution, Munnings, More Than Ready, Palace Malice, Spitestown, Flashback, 10th on the strength of British Idiom.
Right.
But what does that do? What does a get like, and this would be Flash, she comes from Flashback's second crop. What does that do for a sire like a Flashback, you know, who's $3,500 at Diamond B in Pennsylvania.
It'll help him in Pennsylvania, but in the case of both Flashback and New Year's Day, who was sold, both of these two horses, Maximum Security and British Idiom, came from that second crop. So think about this. When your first crop races, that's the stallion's fourth year at stud. So when the second crop races, it's his fifth year at stud. And he'll be entering his sixth year next year. That's how short the leash is, that if you don't make it right away, Steve, owners are punished commercially, particularly at the lower end stud fees. And it just so happened that Flashback and New Year's Day, who were inexpensive horses at Hillendale, both owned by Gary and Mary West, couldn't weather that commercial void that they were going to experience in those last 2 years. And one was sold, and Flashback was moved to Diamond B. Now, this should help Flashback in Pennsylvania, but he's going to have to come up with a few more horses if he's going to be able to resuscitate his career. New Year's Day has actually had quite a few good horses.
Yeah.
So that was a great deal for the people who Shad Eye now owns him in Japan, and he's going to be a legitimate stallion over there.
Since the Flashback came up and we mentioned the situation with British Idiom, and I think I mentioned this in passing after Breeders' Cup, similarly, Storm the Court, who very well may now end up as the two-year-old champion. I mean, it seems like I'm not going to say by quote unquote default. That's not fair to him. But here's Court Vision. Standing in Louisiana,
yeah.
At Acadiana.
Yeah, isn't that something? Isn't that something that a two-year-old champ could be in Louisiana and the two-year-old filly champ could be in Pennsylvania?
Yeah. It's the proverbial good horse comes from anywhere.
Exactly.
That's the best part. And by, you know, speaking of regional, it did catch my eye this morning. Kipling was put down this week. Infirmities of Old Age, 23, and stood at Mighty Acres, 9 of his 18 years at stud in Oklahoma, and a very useful sire, and to say the least. I always, whether it's Oklahoma bred racing or, you know, whenever I would see Kipling progeny, I always kind of rooted a little bit for Kipling, and you know, thoughts for everybody that looked after Kipling, Randy Blair, the farm manager, and I didn't remember that he was such a prominent yearling, actually, a $1.4 million yearling.
Well, you know, he's got that huge pedigree. He's the full brother to Court Vision.
Yep.
And, you know, both by Gulch. And they're both from the family of AP Indy. Weekend Surprise is the second dam of both of them. Both were bred by W.S. Farish and W. Kilroy, you know. So certainly huge in terms of the female family. And interestingly, their sire, Gulch, you know, a son of Mr. Prospector, a horse that was owned by Peter Brandt, who's now made a huge re-entry into the business, but the Gulch sire line is pretty much gone, and Court Vision is one of the last strains for it here in this country. And in Europe, there's a strain through another horse, quite a well-bred horse, has done well there. It's really interesting the way things work.
Well, then, you know, it'll getting Court Vision, you know, bolstered. You know, there's when it comes to the biodiversity discussion, Sid, you know, having those lines that are, I don't want to say hanging by a thread, but, you know, are hanging by a thread. It's important. You know, it's important to keep
it. It is. It's very important, I think.
Yeah.
It's like these heirloom breeds of pigs or whatever, you know. It's great to, you don't want to have them disappear. And, you know, if you look at, you know, we've talked about this, but I mean, you look at Uncle Mo, who's also at Ashford, and John Secura at Hillendale does this too. You know, this is a sire line of Cairo, but through a very weird mix. A Cairo son, Siberian Express, got In Excess, who got a chance at Scoop Trestle's farm in California, who got Indian Charlie, who was a really talented horse, Bob Baffert trained, but only made five starts. He's a big horse, unsound. And Breton Jones, Airdrie Stud, took him to Kentucky to stand. So Indian Charlie was by In Excess, you know, and yet he stood him there. And Indian Charlie turned into a really very good stallion, but got Uncle Mo, who turned into an exceptional horse right now. And so this Cairo line has been resuscitated here several generations later. And so that's what you kind of hope does happen with some of these lines. And you keep the bloodlines alive.
Absolutely. Should also mention before we put a bow on the year, Sid, the general sire list, Into Mischief is going to be the leading stallion in the country. Curlin, second. Tappet, Giants Causeway, Quality Road, your top five, followed by Medagliadoro, Hardspun, Spites Down, Street Sense, and Kitten's Joy. It is amazing. You know, Sid, you look at that list, and that trio of Curlin, Street Sense, and Hardspun, it's, you know, it's like the class of 57.
It really withstood the test, haven't they?
Big time. I mean, it's going to be a while before you have a troika of Triple Crown race winners, you know, to have three different winners, three different. Obviously, Hardspun didn't win a Triple Crown race, but he certainly acquitted himself handsomely. But to have that, you know, those three do what they did on the racetrack and have this impact. That's a class.
That really is. And keep in mind also in that class was the Florida Derby winner, Scat Daddy.
That's right.
Who ended
that's
up
right. He's gone. Jesus, that's
you know?
Right. He's gone. Good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Where'd you be if he had lasted? Well, it's you know, from this standpoint, I mean, certainly it's been a challenging annum. Some final year end thoughts from you, Sid?
Well, it's been a huge year for a tumultuous year for racing, obviously. You know, I've just been listening to people like you, people on your show, reading as much as I can. You know, it's been a tumultuous year in a lot of ways. It's been perhaps more of a rudderless year in terms of racing leadership. And I just hope as we enter the new year that the people that are in charge are able to, first off, create some harmony within the industry, work towards compromise, and exhibit some smart policy, whether it's for racing in terms of horses and trainers and breeders, or for its customer base, the gambling base, and come to some type of level where we as people within this industry can actually applaud the way our leadership is guiding the sport over the next 3 years. I think that's, for me, that's personally the most important thing, because rudderless leadership has been a common theme in our society for the last few years. And let's hope that racing can overcome it, correct it, and lead us forward.
Yeah, well said, Sid. Well said. Well, Sid, I appreciate the contributions all year, and of course we thank Hill and Dale for their longstanding support, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, and we look forward, Sid, to 2020, and of course, Sid, available for your support and your consultation. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111.
Great year, Steve, and I'll on the show, and I'll have a great you and Tina have a great vacation, and we'll talk again in the new year.
On the 8th, I'm just looking at the calendar, so we got a nice freshening, and we'll come at it.
Enjoy the
holiday. Strong. You too.
All right, thank you.
Sid Fernando, everybody. Let's take a break, and coming up about 10 of top of the hour, and we feted him earlier this morning in conversation with Pete, and delighted to get a visit in with Dave Goodfriend and the Maven himself. He's going to join us, and we'll talk about reprising the LoSal victory. And just get some insights from David, who is always just fresh and irreverent and honest and straightforward about everything in the game. And his insights as the year comes to a close, anxious to hear him. Dave Goodfriend joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I ain't talking just to tease.
Well, a perfect intro to the horse playing godfather of soul. The one and only David Goodfriend joins us. Congratulations on the weekend success at Los Al.
It was all funked up.
I told Ford to tell. We were reviewing it, and I was watching the tweets from Los Al, and you were lurking, and then you struck like thunderball.
Yeah, it was interesting going to the last race. I was sitting in third, and the tournament had two NHC spots. Excuse me, I was sitting in second going into the last race, but the person sitting in third was $35 behind me,
And I knew that there was no way that I could just sit there and hope to stay second. I was going to have to bet. I had to bet. And, so I bet and managed to turn, make a little bit of money in the last race. And fortunately, nobody else went crazy in the last race and had the, I think it was like an 80 or 90 to 1 shot that ran second. I think messed up the exotics for a lot of people. And I just made a decent sized win bet on the even money favorite who got there despite missing the break. Gave me a real scare coming out of the gate.
That was the Becerra horse.
Correct.
Dialed
in, I think.
Yeah.
Dialed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because there had been a nice variety. There had been some really seemingly, you know, low price favorites and second choices, but there was a 20 to 1 shot mid card. And then there was the 8 to 1 upsetter, the Harrington Stake winner. So there were a couple of spots, you know, where people might have made some moves.
Well, the Harrington horse was the horse that really put me into position. I hit a daily double from race 7 into race 8, completing that daily double with the Harrington horse. And that was a very fortunate result as the pace turned out really slow. She controlled it, and she managed to hang on. She looked like a winner a long way out, actually. Usually you're sweating those things, you know, all the way. And that horse looked like a winner from, like, the half-mile pole in pretty comfortably, actually.
I've got to ask, and we can talk about you know, strategies and so forth, but I thought to reach out because there's got to be some people getting anxious about qualifying. You get to this, you know, to this point on the calendar, and you know, those without a seat, they you know, you're only going to have so many more opportunities. What do you tell people that are you know, getting a little antsy at this point?
Well, in some ways, Steve, I was one of those people because while I had qualified for the 2020 NHC at Bally's through my tour victory of last season, I actually hadn't properly qualified this year and won a second spot. And to answer your question, I'll just answer the question as how I looked at Saturday's contest at Los Dow. And that was pretty much my last chance at a second spot. Now, I know there's other opportunities in various places, but my advice would be to somebody that there's, you know, different ways to invest your horse racing dollars, and don't be so desperate that you want to do something to take a bad deal to do it. You know, I would have, if I hadn't qualified on Saturday, I'd much prefer having two seats to one seat, but you know, I'm not going to take a bad deal to try and get that second seat. I would just, my advice to people listening would be don't panic. Don't, you know, go crazy. Like, oh, I got to qualify. Guess what? There'll be another NHC the following year, the year after that, the year after that. Just don't panic. Don't overspend. And don't take a bad deal just because you feel as if you have to qualify. Now, don't get me wrong, okay? I want to qualify. I think I've qualified now like 15 times. I'm just not willing to take a bad deal to do it.
Understand.
Steve, just let me follow up on something for a second because Orlando and Jose out at Los Al, they do a terrific job. It's a tournament at Los Alamitos. They pay back 100% of the cash, 100% of the prize pool in cash, and on top of that, they add the two NHC packages, and that is a very fair and an admirable deal and a terrific contest for players to play. And I try and play contests on track only, live tournaments that are good value for players, and Los Al has done a really nice job on the contest front.
It's a wonderful place. I was there the weekend before for the big juvenile stakes, and you know,
Baffert Day
it was, that's for sure. And I might have put myself in Dutch because I said to him after his second win, I said, you know, you could win 5 straight. He said, don't say that. He said, you're going to jinx me. And then
you couldn't even hit a horn.
Exactly. He was as surprised as anybody. But I love going there. It's such a pleasant environment that, you know, upstairs, if you go to the Vessels Club, it might be one of the nicest places, one of the nicest dining room in the entire sport. It's a great Doc Allred. Is just the wonderful host and everybody, you can't help but have a good time when you go to Los Al.
And it was a historic weekend there with Eddie retiring weekend.
Yep.
And he's going to be, I mean, those are big shoes for Michael Rona to fill. And Eddie Burkhart was an absolute stone legend at Los Al.
Do you play the quarters ever?
Not really, no.
No, okay. I just, it occurs to me to ask. I was there for for one night and for the Champion of Champions a few years ago. It was really cool. It was a great experience, but I'm sort of wide-eyed about it.
I don't know how, you know, a track announcer can get so much out in a 20-second race and be able to visualize the way Eddie visualized calling a quarter horse race. And you don't have turns there, you know, they start a long way down the stretch in those 440s. He was just brilliant what he did, and we wish him well in retirement.
In terms of the play and the options out there, one of the follow-up questions to ask is, you know, when you say don't panic for, you know, people that are looking for either that first seat or want to get to Bally's with a second seat, I imagine not panicking also includes, you know, not playing in under conditions that aren't in your comfort zone or in your wheelhouse, not, you know, not trying to do things if you're not an online player or if you don't play, you know, you want to play nothing but live money, you know, picking and choosing based on your strengths.
Absolutely. Just do what you do and do it to the best of your ability. But, you know, there's just like, when it comes to betting the horses on a day-to-day basis, there are wagers that are better for bettors than there are some wagers aren't better for bettors. And that's the way it goes for some tournaments as well, in my ever-so-humble opinion. Some tournaments are better for bettors, and I prefer to play those, and some tournaments aren't as better for bettors, and I prefer to pass on those.
How much, and I want to talk about, you know, your public persona as well, because I did notice the other day ahead of the weekend that you had said that you were going to, you know, back off of you know, a certain degree of commentary.
I knew
you were going to
ask this question.
Well, why wouldn't I? I you know, because you're somebody that is an important persona, and your
I don't
insights,
think of it that way, but it's nice of you to say it. But I mean, for example, Steve, just going to put this out there. This is the first time since I left Treasure Island in February that anybody in the horse racing business has picked up the phone to contact the reigning tour champion. Just saying, I'm just putting that out there in the public sphere. It's been 10 months. It's nice of you to, you know, try and build me up like that. But, you know, that's one of the issues in what I've done regarding Twitter is what I say. I'd like to think it matters. I'd like to think it's important, but at the end of the day, I'm just a little peon, a little speck of dust in the face of the world.
Well, you can't. We've got a rather intimate community. I mean, let's be honest. It's a niche environment when it comes to.
I've got two of those with horse racing and poker.
Yeah. But that's why it's important, Dave, to reach, you know, to hear you and to see what you think and.
Well, I use the word regular, and to me that's like I what I'm really trying to do right now is stop the impulse of like watching a Bulls game and watching them blow a 26-point lead in the second half and then like, what the hell is Boylan doing? Why did this happen again? You know, I'm trying to get myself out of that instantaneous thought process and then starting picking up the phone and just moving my thumb around and whatnot. I mean, I am not going to completely stop tweeting, I don't think. But I really want to break the habit of being, for lack of better words, a Twitter addict. And I think perhaps trying to tie the two together, the reason you're calling me is that I won a horse racing tournament this weekend, and I can tell you this, that when I'm not on Twitter on a regular basis, which has been basically for 2 weeks now, my attitude about life has been significantly better. Whether we could go on and on about negativity in horse racing, negativity in real life right now that's out there. It beats you down. And I was feeling really beaten down by it, and I felt I needed to take a step back.
It's unbelievable that you would go in that direction, in terms of a statement. I actually started the show kind of a free association about the end of the year, and I said the same, something very similar, which is when we're at the racetrack, when you're at a sale, I was just at symposium, when you're doing things that absorb you in what you love. And for you, that's different kinds of gambling activities and sports pleasures. Nobody's being assaulted by the negativity when you're engaged in it. But then, you go to get some news and some feedback and see what, the people are saying and writing and talking. And it's just nothing but an assault on your senses. And it makes you... it makes you basically feel bad about what you're participating in. I don't see how that's healthy for anybody.
And for me personally, and quite frankly, Steve, that's what I got to worry about. I'm basically a one-person business in a lot of ways.
Right.
There's a direct correlation to, feeling good mentally and being able to perform in a poker tournament or in a horse racing tournament.
Yep.
And I'll say this out loud. I have not had a good stretch these last few weeks and months before this past weekend. And while it was nice to win 10 grand and pick up an NHC seat, there's still some digging to do out of the hole that I put myself in the last few months. But I think it was definitely affecting my performance levels, and that's part of the reason in the decision as well. And I almost feel justified and rewarded a little bit in that I went and won a tournament and finally did something good this past weekend. And since we're talking about the topic, and I'm pretty open about my emotions on a lot of things, it wasn't easy not to tweet about the winning the tournament and just saying, oh, I won another tournament, and retweeting what you retweeted and things like that. It took a little strength not to go down that road.
Well, and that everyone knows. I mean, everyone sees it, and that's one of the reasons I wrote what I wrote, which because I'm such a unabashed fan and have been for a long time.
Shucks.
Well, nobody that has put in the the decades-long run of success at this that you have. There's flashes in the pan, there's lucky strikes, there's lightning bolts, and then there's longevity, consistency, and reliability, and confidence in oneself. I mean, the most important message people should take away from this is from this conversation will be it's your own makeup, and if you're being held back at this as a player, rely on yourself to, to break free and turn things around. Because I completely agree with that, with that whole concept.
I wish it was different. Believe me, I wish it was different. But that's the world we live in 2019 going into 2020. It's hard to believe the world has changed as much as it changed. But this is a horse racing show, Steve. Let's not forget that. And seen any good music lately?
Well, we've been doing our Christmas, our crazy Christmas stuff with the last couple of weeks, and I'll wait until after the first of the year to get back to the new and fresh and modern. We did get to go see last month right before Breeders' Cup, went to Breeders' Cup. Went to see the Avett Brothers in Brooklyn, which was fabulous, at the Barclays Center.
Very nice. Very nice.
Well, you're in Vegas, as Pete mentioned, you're in Vegas, so you've got you can poach a lot of different things in a lot of directions. What's your schedule look like between now
well,
and the time that things come
I've got to
you?
Go back to I'm going over to Harrah's later on today at noon to play day two of their $400 Monster Stack tournament. 57 people bag chips. I'm one of them, 50 people cash. It's not a huge tournament. $23,000 up top. A lot of poker going on in Las Vegas. As I look out my bedroom window at the Bellagio, the tournament that I wish I was playing is going on at Bellagio this weekend. This week, a $10,000 buy-in tournament with over 1,000 entries. But my budget doesn't comply, and neither does my skill level. But there's all kinds of poker going on. It's almost like a mini summer camp in Vegas right now. It's kind of current series going on at the Wynn, going on at Venetian, going on at Bellagio, and going on at Harrah's. So we're spoiled for choice poker-wise, tournament-wise here in Las Vegas.
Wow. How much horseplay are you engaging in, during a typical week?
I would say I'm a weekend warrior at best. For example, last weekend, and I didn't get involved, but I looked at the pick fives at Aqueduct and at Tampa Bay. I actually played a couple of them on Friday. But generally, I played the pick six, the mandatory pick six, Aqueduct a couple Saturdays ago, and I managed to leave out the Mott Godolphin horse on a not that big of a play. They could have gone five deep instead of four deep in that race and not missed that relatively easy 4-1 shot. An example of the hole I dug myself in what I was getting wrong. I would say that I'm a weekend warrior. I'm aware of what's going on. One of the nice things about being in Vegas is, you have that easy access to racing forms. You have easy access to, if you want to bet and literally roll out and go half a mile to, one of any of a half dozen casinos and bet away. I would say I'm a recreational horse player with a little bit of a past and some things on the computer. In the old computer system in my brain that still exists, a lot of historical stuff.
How much do you partake in sports bets?
Almost nothing.
Okay.
I mean, the NFL I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. The lines are way, way too efficient. They're so good with their lines.
Yeah.
And whenever it seems like I have a strong opinion in the NFL, I'm wrong. whenever I don't have a strong opinion, I have a chance at being right. But when the Bears played Dallas, for example, almost two Thursdays ago,
yeah,
I thought for sure Dallas would come into Soldier Field and do what they did to the Rams on Sunday. I have no faith in Trubisky. I thought the Bears were no good, and I would have bet Dallas with both hands in that game. It took some self-discipline to stop myself from doing it, and I told myself, you're just going to be so upset if the Bears win. Don't do it to yourself. The best answer I can give you on sports betting is, and I'm a huge sports fan, is if I make a sports bet and I get it right, that's what's supposed to happen. No big deal. I don't get happy. But if I lose, I get very, very upset. And I just, the aggravation level just doesn't make it worthwhile. It's a tough, tough, tough racket. It's one of those things, like many forms of gambling, that appears much easier than it actually is.
It's funny you say that, because when we were discussing, you know, what the long-term prospects might be out there in terms of how, the industry was going to react to it and how it could interact with it. And of course, without Dennis Drazen and Monmouth, this era of the proliferation of sports gambling wouldn't have happened, at least as quickly as it did. But one of the things that I kind of thought out loud, just from my own experience, I think there's all these people who thought, oh, gosh, great, I can bet on sports now, and I'm going to do great. And I think they're going to be in for a surprise. And when people have
They've
asked,
already been in for a surprise.
Right? Exactly. And to me, when we ask what benefit is there to horse racing from a gambling game, it's an opportunity for us to say, if you want to play a game and have a chance to win, as tough as our marketplace is and as expensive as it is to bet, at least you got a fighting chance, because you might be able to figure out angles where you can be successful, as opposed to casino gaming and the sports betting landscape, where if you're not a sharp, you're a square.
All I'll say on the topic, Steve, is you know me back from my days from the starting game when I had the radio show 20 years ago. I've been doing horse racing for close to 40 years. Gosh, I feel so old when I say that. And horse racing has gotten a lot harder as well. The markets have gotten a lot more efficient. And unfortunately, the takeout has only gotten bigger and not smaller over the years. Horse racing is not getting any easier as well. Now, having said all that, there are still occasional opportunities. You have to be disciplined. For all the grief, and deservedly so, the jackpot wagers get, with the proliferation of those types of bets, at least you're getting 8, 10, 12, 14 mandatory payouts a year where, there's a lot of chump money just sitting there waiting for somebody to take it, as long as you can pick 6 winners on that particular day. Now, the trick about those mandatory payouts is, the only way you get value out of them is actually by hitting it, and that's the tough part. But there are occasionally some nice pick 5 carryovers.
Yep.
And, you do get some legit overlays every now and then, but there's so much fewer and far between, and the reality is most horse players, and I'll include myself in this category, don't really have the discipline to pass on okay bets to wait for really good bets.
Yep.
And that's the tricky part, is you get sucked into playing thinking that there's more good bets than there actually are, and it's not easy.
No doubt about it. And having that discipline, for the prime bets, and not, staying away from too many action bets. I mean, it's now and then you take an interest and you want a little you know, you want a little something to add to the to add to your viewing enjoyment. But
now I will put this out there, and I will say something that's deemed positive. So, you know, not my persona per se isn't completely negative. While I've talked about, you know, efficiency of like the NFL market, how horse racing has gotten to be a more efficient marketplace. While the tournament landscape has become a little more efficient over the years, I'd use, to try and put a big bow around everything here, Steve, yeah. I use what happened at Los Al this past weekend. I took out 57.5% of the cash money prize pool. I got an extra 7.5% because I bet the most, which was a really nice little Brucey bonus at the end of the day. I would say for somebody that's willing to put in the time and the effort regarding horse racing, you know, horse racing tournaments is still a place where there are advantages to be had. And it's not yet as efficient as it will be in a few years. It's gotten more efficient over the last few years, but it still has long strides to go to get to being really efficient, which is fortunate for me as I can kind of partake in this game part-time. And while I don't have the passion for the sport that I used to have, there's no doubt about that. When it comes to being competitive, when it comes to going up against the people that I go up against in horse racing tournaments, whether they're the jackasses or whether they're the good guys, I'm very competitive, and I want to win. And I still think in horse racing tournaments I have half a chance, and I think there's I still think there's really, really good opportunities there. And quite frankly, you know, the opportunity that comes up in the beginning of February at Bally's is an annual opportunity for me to change my life. You know, I don't play any of the bad deal tournaments. It's essentially a free roll for me, a $2 million free roll. Sorry, folks. Sorry to the players that I'm about to say, but it's funded by the players that play the online tournament. They throw a party for me every year. Thank you very much. They make a $2 million tournament available for me by taking bad deals. That's the reality of the situation, my situation, and I'm very fortunate to have it, and I look forward to 2 months from now. It'll be very most likely the next horse racing tournament I play. I'm going to be as ready as I can. I think the anxiety level will be ratcheted way, way down compared to last year.
Right, right.
All the attention, all the craziness with the, you know, $6 million bonus and everything. Find a nice little corner to sneak into this year, and just we'll see what happens, and maybe I can spring a surprise on a few folks.
Well, and that's a terrific angle on this year's tournament without the added pressure and focus of the bonus and as the tour winner a year ago, that the focus will be elsewhere, and that's when the Maven strikes when least expected, and as I described you the other day, redoubtable and a fierce competitor and always a treat to visit. David, looking forward to seeing you in Vegas, and may 2020 be the best year yet.
Thanks for the time, Steve. Thanks for picking up the phone, and I wish all the horse players out there happy holidays, happy new year, and may 2020 be awesome.
David, good friend, and whether he's going to come back in full force on Twitter or not, always great to hear from, and really an upbeat, positive message in several directions from David. And a real treat. I was looking forward to this. We'll take a break here. We'll come back and we'll spend the rest of the morning with Chuck Simon, who's in the studio. Industry Answers with Chuck. I got a couple of interesting topics I want him to broach, and we'll see what's on his mind as well. Chuck Simon, Cannon Shell, ready to go off when we come back at the races.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American fall crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our Racehorse Development Fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
It was a night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. My baby came home. I asked her where she was. She grinned and said that she was out with the whole Santa Claus. Oh, there's trouble brewing now. Oh, yeah, well, there's trouble brewing now. Oh, yeah. The snow is white, so crisp and white. But there's trouble brewing tonight. 12:30.
We're back at the races. I'm going to mention Ken Jordan for a second time today. thanks, Kenny. Got a terrific note from Ken, who was listening in to the visit from the Maven. Trouble brewing. Whenever Chuck Simon shows up, there's potential for trouble.